Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Vodka O'Clock Podcast. I'm your host, Amber Love, from amberunmasked.com, and thank you to the generous supporters at Patreon who keep things like this show and my work going. The work includes weekly cat detective stories and my novels. So thank you to them. You can become one at patreon.com/amberunmasked. Joining me back on the show, I cannot believe it's been 2-3 years, is Stephen Blackmore. Holy crap. It's like 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while.
I was like, oh, we just talked like last year. And then I was like, holy crap. Yeah. Yeah, like, well, we were just talking about how time means nothing.
So. Yes. This year has been 15 years long. So.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We remember when we thought 2016 couldn't get any worse.
No. Yeah.
And the universe was like, fuck you.
Hubris.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah. So the last time we talked, it was because your Eric Carter book 3, I think, or 4. And
it's book 5 is that just came out.
So, yeah. So now book five is out. So, yeah, we were talking about, what did we talk about? Hungry Ghosts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously. Uh-huh. So Ghost Money is now on its way out. Now, is this the one where, publishing was kind of like up and down, and this is before the quarantine pandemic, whatnot? Like, was this, I can't remember, one of the books, I thought you had like some publishing issues that.
Oh. No, that was actually Hungry Ghosts. And
okay.
That was about a year late, simply because I had
shit.
I had shit. Wow. Yeah, depression.
Yeah.
Hit hard. And it really fucked me up. So I am not doing that again. Okay. I'm doing what I can to make sure that does not happen. So it's,
and so the process from that, I mean, I hope you didn't like beat yourself up about it.
Oh God. Yes.
Oh, okay. But don't.
That's kind of goes with the territory.
Yeah, I know it does. I know. You're with the same like agent and publisher.
Yep.
And all.
Actually, different agent now.
Oh, different agent. Okay.
Different agent. And she actually we just signed another 3 books in the Eric Carter series. So I'm actually working on that one. Ghost Money's book 5. Bottle Demon is book 6. I just turned in a final draft of that. And then the next one is called Suicide Kings. And started working on that. So there will continue to be Eric Carter books.
That's so wonderful. I'm so excited to hear that.
I am surprised.
Aww.
I honestly am. It's like, okay, well, you know, it's just the idea that I'm doing this kind of surprises me. Mm-hmm. And the idea that people seem to like them surprises me, but that's, I think, just, you know, me. So, I mean, I'm going to feel like that no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's just part of being a creator in general, you know, if it's a comic book or, you know, a cartoon or something and people are like, oh my God, do you like me?
Yeah. You know, if I'm at a con and somebody comes up to me and recognizes me or asks me to sign a book, I am terrified. It's like, why is there something wrong with you? And I think that's just something. I mean, there's something I'm trying to get past, because it's that, well, clearly you like my book. And I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, because one, it's my book and I'm glad that you like it. But also, that's kind of a dick thing to do. It's like, oh, really? You like this piece of shit? Like, no.
Oh, you know, no.
It's just don't want to do that. So, yeah. But I mean, it's kind of intimidating. And I know a lot of people who have a lot more of that kind of thing going on, and they seem to do just fine. I'm babbling, by the way, just sort of rambling.
But the imposter syndrome thing is like a real thing.
You know, and that's one of the things I have to remind myself of is the fact that, and I think this goes for anybody with, I think it's just imposter syndrome in general. The fact that you are in a position to feel like an imposter, you have to be in the room,
right?
Before you can actually feel like an imposter, you know?
Yeah, like if you're around all these people.
Well,
if you never even get your draft done, then right.
I mean, if you're in a room with other authors or on a panel or something like that, and they are your peers, whether you think you're worthy or deserving or not, clearly you're doing something right. So I try to keep in mind that if I've got imposter syndrome going on, that means I'm not an imposter, because I couldn't be in the room to feel imposter syndrome in the first place if I wasn't already able to do that. So it's a hard thing to hang on to, though. But that I find myself having to remind myself about that a lot.
Well, obviously we hang with the same writers online anyway. A lot of the same folks, like Tom Pluck and Dennis Tafoya, all these wonderful people.
They're awesome.
Hillary Davidson. I just finished her new book, Don't Look Down. And
I've heard really good things about that.
It's so good. It was so, so good. And I didn't realize it was a book two, but I got the galley and I was like, oh, this is a book two. I like immediately went and like bought the book one, you know. I was like, I love these characters. This is amazing. But you were talking about, now this is the Eric Carter series, and obviously you get to take a break once in a while. You know, you work on these anthologies with like some of our friends that we were talking about. So you can give your brain something else to do, but otherwise living in this world that you've created, and we're talking like an urban fantasy horror noir type thing. Eric Carter's a necromancer, just to give you an understanding of where we're coming from. So to live in that world, and you're working on what it'll be like 10 books eventually. I know when it comes to like actors have dropped out of long running shows because they're just like, I just need to be somebody else. I need to do something else. Like it's not that they're ungrateful, but like, do you at this point have any issue with living in your world that you've made?
I ask myself that sometimes. I'm not sick of it yet. I've also gotten, I think, a better handle on the character and the world itself, and I'm trying to expand that some more, so it's not all coming out of, it's not all through Eric's voice and coming out of Eric's head. There are other things going on in that, and yeah, he's a point of view character, but being able to grow him, even if it's slow, because he's a certain way and he's not going to, you know, flip over a new leaf overnight. If ever, I don't think that I will get sick of it. Because I think there's a lot to tell in that world. I may not be writing all Eric Carter. And also I'm not really going to think too hard about that, because I've got, you know, I got three more books, three more years of this, four actually, because book six will be coming out next year. And then, so that'd be 2021, 22, 3, 24, which, wow, 2024.
It doesn't seem like a real year.
Is that real? So it's not something I have to worry about too much right now. Also, I want to do other things in addition. And in order to make writing work as an actual career, where this is just what I do, there's a lot of other things I have to do. I can't just say, okay, one book a year. Hey, you know, I can't live off of royalties. I can't live off of advances. And it was actually kind of funny. My wife sent me an article of a sort of a realistic plan of this is how you can actually be a full-time author and, you know, have a living wage. And it's none of it was new information.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all, okay, so this small amount is actually what you get enough books. And a lot of it is panels, teaching classes, speaking gigs, things like that. There's a bunch of other ancillary pieces that go into making that. And it's, I think, important for me to remember that that's how it works. We aren't in, I mean, I'm not Stephen King. I'm not putting out, you know, mega blockbusters, and I'm really not trying to. But there are other things that I not only can, but really need to be doing. Right now I've got a Patreon at the moment, just started it recently, which, you know, during a pandemic when everybody's losing their jobs, a great time.
I know to
start one. But
you're not the only one who did too. I know people that have had their Kickstarters launched and everything.
But I'm trying to do a couple of things in that, not just, hey, here's some interesting comment, you know, throw a couple bucks my way. It's more, I'm writing a novel on it and I'm not editing it.
That's so super cool though. I think that's so awesome.
Thank you. I hope it turns out to be, but part of it is the idea. I mean, I'm going to write, say, okay, you know, we've gotten up to this chunk of scenes, and then I want to be able to go in and say, okay, this is what I was trying to do. This is how I tried to make it work. I don't know if it worked, and I don't know what's going to have to change because this is a rough draft. So
are those like comments that you're also making as posts in your Patreon? Like
will be because I literally just started it.
Okay. So, yeah, because I do a similar thing. Like I put up the weekly cat stories. But then for bigger projects, I have a tier for behind the scenes stuff, which is, you know, like my top tier people. But I always love behind the scenes things, like especially like about comics and movies. And that's why I love interviewing authors, and because I love to nitpick and find out what's in your head and, you know, how you overcame some roadblocks or whatever that comes up. I think it's interesting.
You know, I think for any creator, those kinds of conversations are important craft conversations, because it's not just, well, how did you structure act one and where did you break act two and when did you hit certain beats or things like that? Some of it's, so how did you get past the fact that, you know, your mom died while you were writing this?
Right.
It's like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's important, you know, because people may run into that, or just standard, like, what about writer's block? What did you, you know, everything that goes into making the sausage, as it were.
Right. Well, you and know. You mentioned, you know, having depression for up to a year. I mean, that sucks the life out of you. It sucks the joy out of everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so is the Patreon going to just be like your name, or is it S Blackmore? Is it, what's the address?
I'm honestly not sure. Let me.
And how do you pronounce your wife's name? Is it Kari or Carrie?
Carrie.
Carrie. Okay.
Yeah.
I've been following her on Twitter for so long, and I'm like, I feel like a dope that I don't know how to actually say her name.
Hey, I get called Stefan all the time.
Oh, okay.
It is patreon.com/sblackmore, 2 O's and an E.
Yes. Your name though doesn't boggle me as much as Jonathan Mayberry, whose name I never spell right. I can spell Swarzynski.
Well, yeah, that's something though that you have to learn and really try, because that's like, you've given me a puzzle that I have to solve.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for anybody who's reading this or listening to this, doesn't know what the hell we're talking about. This is an author, Dwayne Swarzynski, I just mispronounced it. Who does novels, comics, screenplays? Fantastic writer, and nobody can really seem to spell his name right. So when I finally managed to do it the first time, without having to look it up, I emailed and said, dude, this is like a defining moment for me.
It's amazing. He's impressed when people pronounce it correctly. And I'm like, hey, I grew up with a Polish last name, so, you know, I'm golden. But I type terribly. So the fact that I might type it incorrectly doesn't mean that I'm spelling it incorrectly. That's a whole different thing. My typing sucks. Like, I mean, I mistype the all the time.
Oh,
you know?
Same here.
So that's a different thing, but S Blackmore, awesome. And I wish you the best. I love Patreon as a platform. It's gone through some growth, and was some pushback. I will say this, for people who are listening, since it's a digital platform, and in certain states, like I can remember this from years ago, you will get sales tax now charged. That's new because it skirted around the law, and the law had to catch up. So it was just like when I could buy music off of Amazon or books off of Amazon, and I never paid New Jersey sales tax from it. And then all of a sudden, New Jersey, you know, this was like three governors ago, was just like, hey, wait a minute. People are spending kind of a lot of money on the internet.
Yeah, who knew?
So, so those types of growth things do come up.
Yeah, I think that's inevitable. You know, all these things are going to change. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't know if this is going to be, I don't even know what to call success. Like how do I define it for Patreon? Like X number of patrons, X number a month, you know, I don't really know. I haven't actually dug into, like the best way to approach certain things. Mostly I'm trying to give interesting content. I mean, I've got on Twitter, I have, and I haven't done as much of them recently just because, you know, the world being what it is, sort of these fake horoscopes.
Right. You got kind of well known for those.
Yeah. To the point where I was at the Nebula dinner, and I'm at this table with editors and, you know, from different publishers, and we're just kind of introducing ourselves. And I say, yeah, I'm Stephen Blackmore. And the woman across from me says, oh, hey, you're the horoscope guy. Yes, yes. Not an author. Not, you know, just, I'm the horoscope guy.
Exactly.
And that's fine. So what I'm doing on the Patreon is longer form, once a month. You know, here's the monthly predictions for each sign, rather than like on Twitter where I do one or two a week. That's just like a, you know, one line kind of thing. And then I'm trying to do also just, hey, here's writing advice or stupid bullshit I'm thinking about or whatever. And then I'm doing the serialized novel. Who knows? Is it really gonna work or take off or do anything for me? Don't know, but we're doing it anyway. Because all these things were things I was going to do.
Right. So let me ask you this. As someone, because I'm not agented, I would love to be, still querying. When it comes to doing something like a Patreon and a serialized novel, are you asking your agent for any input? Like, hey, am I like, you know, do you have legal dibs on this or something?
No. Okay. Well, sort of. I pinged her before I actually started the whole thing and said, okay, this is what I'm doing. Do you have any issues with this? And she's like, nothing here is going to get in the way of anything that we're working on. So no, it's all good. Because, you know, the thing with the, well, I completely lost my train of thought. I mean, I could self-publish. And,
right. Okay. But that's, you know, yeah. So that's what I was, you know, you're not doing like the serialized novels separate from the Eric Carter world, or even if it was somehow a tie-in, like it's still your property.
It's still my, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that there are things like it would be considered self-published if it was posted. And I think and I think that's a, maybe a little odd because it's such a limited audience, but maybe it depends on how huge your Patreon gets. That something would be considered, like if you put it up on Wattpad or whatever, it would be considered already published and an agent wouldn't be willing to rep that.
Yeah, which is something that I don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that too occasionally, but I've also heard the opposite more frequently, because if you go to an agent and say, hey, I've got this, you know, I've got this book that I've been writing on Patreon and this is the draft. And oh, by the way, 5,000 people have been paying, you know, $5 a month, for the last year and a half as I've been poking around at it. Would you be interested in picking it up? Okay, that's going to tell you, I mean, you've got an audience who are willing to pay money, and for a thing that maybe isn't polished, you know, so that's the thing is I don't understand. It's like, why would you not consider, something that has clearly some legs to it,
right? And that's what I wondered. Yeah. And I don't know.
I think the way I look at it is, if I were, because I switched agents last year, and I looked around for ones who mostly who had an internet presence, who I could kind of take a look at, say, okay, what do they think like? How do they, what kind of, you know, how do they present? What kind of person they are? Does this look like it might be a fit? And if I ran into somebody saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to take anything if you've self-published, then it's like, wow, I want absolutely nothing to do with you. So there's this power dynamic that publishing and the wheels of publishing have over a lot, I think a lot of creators in general, we don't talk about how much money we make. I mean, there's, it's like, well, right. What did you get for this?
I love when people, when people are willing to do that, like Alex DeCampi, you know, or Colleen Duran, Cameron Hurley, you know, it seems like women are the ones like that seem to be like at the forefront of saying, look, we need to talk about pay.
Yeah.
Mainly to see how unequal it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I haven't in a while, but I have no problem talking about what I'm making off my books. You know, I got three book, this three book deal was for 10K a book. And Daw does with Daw's publisher, and they do advances on signing and acceptance. So some publishers do like three or four. Okay, you got your money this time. Okay, now this one. And now here's your chunk. And it ends up being spread out. So it's not much. But fortunately with Daw, I was able to get 15K off the bat. Obviously going through, you know, 15% off out of that to my agent. But I think we have to talk about money. I think we have to talk about money everywhere, you know, not just as creators, but, you know,
in all kinds of fields. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, to the point where there are protests to get, you know, fast food at a reasonable wage and, you know, to really stop dehumanizing people based on their jobs.
That. And also, I think, well, rather, yeah, yes, 100% yes. And I think it tends to be done through shame. Oh, yeah. Well, it's just not done. What you've committed some faux pas by saying how much money you actually are making. And this is something that that I've always found irritating about the corporate world. Of, okay, well, we're going to offer you a job. We're here's your offer. It's like, well, that's too low. It's like, sorry, but that's industry standard. Okay, well, if it's industry standard means that you and a bunch of other people in the industry decided that it's industry standard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what here is actually supporting that idea? Like minimum wage. Minimum wage is a fucking joke. You know, it's insulting.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is.
And it's like, you're going to get, you need to work full-time at this job. Oh, and full-time at that job. And don't expect to be able to buy, you know, insurance or pay rent after doing both of those. Right. What was that a few years back where there was a sample budget for McDonald's.
Oh my God. Yes. I remember that going around. It's like,
okay. Wow. There's nothing here for transportation.
Right.
There's nothing here.
There was nothing that said groceries. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It was so ridiculous. And it's like, this is how you know, we consider this a livable wage. And it's like, are you high? Like, I mean, I think people who are high could make a better budget.
Yeah.
But this is why places like, you know, Denmark and Finland are like happier places to live. You know?
Well, that's one of the things about just that. And honestly, almost everything in the United States, we all of our institutions are based on shame and punishment. Okay. Well, if you're going to work, you know, fast food, well, you're really not worth that much. So we're going to give you just a little money, and everybody else looks at you and goes, oh, well, if you're just a burger flipper, then you're a nobody. Get a real job, kind of thing.
Meanwhile, they have to face things like, you know, being shot if, you know, they've told somebody to put their mask on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we live in ludicrous times where, you know, the novels that we are writing cannot possibly be any more, they can't even equal the amount of ridiculous that we are living in. And you're, and we're writing about people who, like, you know, can see ghosts and whatnot.
But also, okay, book four, Fire Season. Spoiler for anybody who doesn't read it, and it's pretty obvious that it is going to happen once you start reading it. LA pretty much burns to the ground. And in one night, 100,000 people die. And just looking at the number of people who are dying in the nation from one disease, we're already, I don't think we've hit 100 yet.
No, I think it's in the 80s at the moment.
We're at 92,478 now. Yesterday we were in the 80s.
How about that?
You know, and just, wow, I look at that and go, wow, maybe I undershot.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So here, writing this fantasy novel and thinking, I'm going to make this devastating impact.
Right. You know? And only 100,000?
Only 100,000. Yeah. I mean, it's at the point, and I was also like sad that like V Wars, the TV series on Netflix, got canceled, because that's based on a series too. Because it showed how quickly, that was about the vampire virus, showed how insanely quickly it spread. And usually what happens in vampire stories or zombie stories, they have such a slow build where it's like, it's such a secret. And, you know, then people can't discover it, and they live in secrecy, and then all of a sudden there might be like one small colony, but other people don't even know it exists. And you know, it's got that very occult sense to it, where you have your believers and your non-believers. But things like iZombie and V-Wars were just like fuck, people are getting this thing. and we have to deal with it. So in iZombie, it was the city of Seattle, and they built a border wall to keep, you know, to keep the zombies in. And they had this task force of, you know, the brand new branch of the government, and that was actually, you know, privately run, of course.
Of course.
You know, and it's just like, you think that you've created something so outlandish, and it's not.
And then reality, hold my beer.
Yes. I mean, and that's the only thing, like, we're not getting the superpowers. We're just getting dead.
Yes.
Yeah. It would be different if we were getting the superpowers.
Yeah. It's like the, you know, the whole thing with Blade Runner and Cyberpunk. It's like, okay, you know, I can deal with the fact that we would have a really fucked up socioeconomic system, but at least I would have cool tech.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
Now yeah. I've got fucking TikTok.
You know? I won't even sign up. I don't even want another goddamn thing. Like, I say that now, but I said that about Instagram too, and joined 10 years after.
Right. So do I get like cybernetic eyes? No, but you do get invasive software in Facebook.
Yes, you do get to completely give your privacy away to play puzzle games on your Kindle. And that's what I do. I'm like, I never thought I would download a so-called free game, because I know what they do for free.
Right.
But
you're the product.
But I was, yeah, exactly. But I was just like, I got into June's Journey and Seeker's Notes, and I'm just like, these are fucking brilliant. Like, there's story here. There is so much story in these silly games where you have to, like, you know, match objects or find objects hidden in the scene. And I'm like, damn, I hope these, like, you know, developers and writers got paid enough for this.
Probably not. You know, it's,
I mean, it's not like Gears of War. Like, you know, you think of like this big, you know,
well, even then, games, but, even you know, then, they don't get paid much.
Yeah.
You know, I've been up for a couple of different writing positions with video games. And it's been like, wow, that would be great. It's hard work. I know it's hard work. I know it's going to go into that, and I can't afford to take that job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that, okay, that's great, but I'm, you know, if I were living in Portland or Texas or I don't know, fucking anywhere else than LA, that'd be a different story.
But the job wouldn't be there.
But the job wouldn't necessarily be there. You know,
although we have proven, of course, with this pandemic, we have proven how much shit you can do from your home. Absolutely. And we've been arguing this for a long time for things like this. Like, hey, I would like to live by my family who happens to live in, you know, this podunk town in nowhere. You know, but it's like, oh, but the job's in New York City. And it's,
And the fact that there has always been the resistance to accepting working from home by companies,
mm-hmm.
has always gotten it. The way I keep seeing it is like, okay, what you're saying then is that you don't trust me. You think
they want to monitor and babysit all right, you at all times.
I might not give you the level of productivity that you are expecting, even though if I'm in an office, you're not monitoring my level of productivity as closely there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a software job, and we had this policy where they put a bunch of people on work from home because they were trying to reduce overhead and sold a bunch of buildings and properties after they'd extended themselves a little too much and bought a couple other companies. So
yeah, and that makes sense. You get a smaller carbon footprint.
Well, exactly. Yeah. There's a lot there. And then a couple of years later, somebody else came into a leadership position and went, no, I don't believe this. This is not feasible. Everybody has to come into the office.
Oh boy.
It's like, okay, why?
Why?
We've been doing this for the last 2-3 years and it's been working fine. And in fact, everybody on this team is located in different places. So if I'm going to talk to anybody or work with anybody, I'm going to be on the phone or on IM or some kind of video chat or something like that because they're in fucking Texas. So
right.
How does my coming into an office actually help? What does this gain anybody by my doing it?
And I wonder, and maybe since you're in LA and you have different contacts out there, obviously things TV production wise have shut down because of we can't, you know, have more than 6 feet between or less than 6 feet between us. But typically there was always this notion of the writer's room you sat around a conference table and, you know, you wrote or you had smaller offices and each person went off and did their scenes and then you came back and hashed shit out on a whiteboard. So it's like, have we proven that in something that is such a team effort that it could be done?
I was actually talking to somebody about this yesterday.
Okay,
and that's exactly what they're forced to do. It's okay, you're having virtual writers' rooms. And there are challenges because you can't really bounce ideas off of each other necessarily as freely or as quickly when you're on a Zoom call, at least not at first, than if you'd be, you know, in an actual writer's room where, you know, you're kind of just throwing ideas around. From what I'm hearing, it works, but there are some definite issues with it. But I think we're going to reach a point where that's going to be a very viable way of doing a lot of it. Honestly, I don't know. Cause right now the whole thing is up. The whole industry is up in the air.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and the conversation is like, hey, at least I'm employed. It's like, yeah, that's great, because it's only going to last for like another, you know, 2 months. A lot of stuff shut down until August.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not like things aren't happening. They're just having to adjust. And I mean, I have a very small sample of like two people who told me about it. But I can't imagine that that's not a fairly common experience, because it's an adjustment. No matter what, it's an adjustment. You're going from, you know, being in a room with a bunch of people to seeing a bunch of boxes on a screen and hope that they know which one you're looking at, because everybody's got the different boxes in different locations. And if I'm not looking at my camera, I'm not looking out. And so do I look like I'm like staring off into space? What? I don't know. That's going to be an adjustment for anybody.
Yeah. And even just with, because of the technology, like, you know, this is, you know, voice over IP, even just occasionally, like what we want to do is talk at the exact same time to be like, yes, affirmative, I agree. And,
yeah.
You know, and it doesn't let you because it needs one speaker at a time. So it's just like, but that's not how we talk, but it might gradually happen. Like the same thing with how tweets and texting has changed language and made words shorter and meaningless, and it just looks like, you know, things that aliens
using emoticons for everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like we're using pictograms and just you know, like BRB. It's like, you know, there just might be language change along with etiquette change.
Oh, there's definitely going to be etiquette change. And I think I think the technology is already catching up to deal with some of those things. Zoom, for example, it's not a one person talking thing. You can have, it's up to the host to let people talk or keep them quiet, right, or whatever, because they're in charge of that. But you can have everybody talking all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's chaos, obviously. But it's doable. And I think there are probably a lot of companies right now looking at Zoom's success, because they've just skyrocketed since all this happened. And going, we can do better. And exactly, they're going to, you know, and we're going to see more advances of, okay, well, this one gives us, you know, a better experience. This one's faster. This one's, you know, whatever.
Yeah. You just might have more options and, you know, and that's going to actually employ more people specifically to be like admins of those tools.
Yeah. Cause you'll need them. They'll use AI for some of it and this, you know, and so on, but you're still gonna have that. And in terms of etiquette, you know, what's the etiquette for being on a Zoom call? Okay, well, do I have to wear pants?
I know, right?
You know, if I'm on an audio call, well, I don't have to shave, or I can be in pajamas. Hell, I could be sitting naked on the toilet. And as long as I don't flush, nobody knows.
Exactly.
But at some point, you know, what's it going to turn? What's going to be, you know, acceptable behavior? Hey, Bob, can you make sure you mute before you sneeze and blow out all our eardrums? You know, and that's going to become a thing. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, but there are going to be changes.
Yeah,
we're gonna. God, I don't remember what it was. It was an article. My wife sends me all sorts of medical she's got a medical background, and she's fascinated with just a lot of the stuff with the coronavirus going on right now. But she sent me an article, and the point of the article was, we don't give enough credence to the effect that the 1918 flu had on the following decades. Because after that, we had a big rise in nationalism, a big rise in religions, and really kind of growing in certain ways there, and also a lot more risk-taking behavior, you know, the 1920s, right? And so the premise of the article was, if you look at that...
We're repeating history.
Yeah, if you look at that, you're going to have a lot of societal change based on just from the simple fact of, holy shit, I can die.
Right, so why don't I go...
So why don't I do XYZ?
Exactly. Why don't I go, like, you know, snort a few lines or whatever?
I'm a little worried about what we're going to get out of it. I mean, I think we're already seeing some things coming out just from like conspiracy theories, and
it truly is. And you can tell that the protests that are going on, like, people are taking pictures and they're proving that these people are actual Nazis. You know, and that it's being organized by like three people. They're just good at organizing. But we saw it here in Jersey. Jersey's known for the shore and Atlantic City. And so the governor said, okay, I will open the boardwalks, but as long as you guys follow the rules. Sure enough, the pictures that came out were everybody crammed together and partying. And it's just like, you fucking morons. I mean, I get being happy and wanting to celebrate, but we still aren't there yet. So I think the idea of, well, let's do a slow transition. I don't think people are even going, they just want to leap.
I don't think we will have a slow trend. In some places we will, but a lot of places you are just going to have that leap because people are stupid.
I say that all the time. I'm like, a person can be smart, but people are stupid. Okay. I think I got that from House. So thank you, Dr. House.
And that's the kind of behavior that we're going to see. Particularly, you know, we don't have answers. And when there's crisis like this, people want answers and they will go looking for them wherever they can. And if it's a conspiracy theory that says, hey, look at A, B, C, D, hey, that means that this is happening, then it can be really easy to get sucked into that and go, oh my God, it's the Democrats are doing this, the Republicans are doing this, or take it back to the, 20s and 30s, it's all the Jews' fault. Germany and all that.
People are still going around and saying such nonsense like that.
Yeah, because they're answers. They're wrong answers, and they're not wrong answers,
but they are answers. Yeah, you're right. And as we speak of publishing, people can publish whatever the fuck they want. So they can be like, here's the textbook we're going to use. And so much of like Native history and Black history was not covered thoroughly or not covered very well. In our history books, and we went through certain things that, you know, like the famous enough things, you know,
right?
Like, yeah, but that, well, the like there was a limit
that were okay, but like,
yeah, but like I never heard of like Wilma Manhunter or, you know, Winona LaDuke until like, you know, the last few years, and it's a shame. And in the scheme of we're repeating history, people have referenced, you know, the Spanish flu and the, you know, 1918 to 1919. And as soon as you see a quote by, or, you know, the dope in the White House, people take it as fact. And it's just like, in fact, do you follow Dr. Jen Gunter? She's amazing. She gets in fights with Gwyneth Paltrow all the time.
No, but I am going to now.
Yeah. So she was just posting, she was just making a thread of people's like favorite, like medical hoaxes or whatever, like favorite bad studies, because like you said, like sample size 2 is not much of a sample size. So when it comes to doing a good clinical trial, you need to each phase increase, you know, as you move from like animal testing, mm-hmm. which I don't even know why they do anymore, but eventually you start with a small sample size of people that you know have a certain condition versus people who don't. These are usually just men who are healthy, and, you know, and so that's part of the problem. And then you gradually make the sample size bigger to get better data. And that's that size, just for statistics, is important because when like people are doing those like ancestry tests, mm-hmm. the bulk of the data is white European data. So until more people who are something besides that start adding to the actual records, mm-hmm. then, you know, like there was some, like it was hilarious when the podcast I was listening to, it was like, you know, a woman who is like completely Indian, like Indian parents from India, and her thing came back with like all these other like nonsense factors. And you can submit, like, say you submit it again, you'll get like a whole different set of results. So, so it's all because of data, and that's just how it works with sample sizes and statistics. So, I don't know why I get so hung up on it, because I did not do well in college statistics. but I did take courses a little bit in clinical trial information. So Dr. Jen Gunter was asking people for their favorite terrible clinical trials. And, you know, the famous one about supposedly, you know, vaccines cause autism. And it's like that guy admitted when he was forced uh-huh. to, that he made it all up.
Like, and he lost his license.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can point out and say it is not true. Here are all of the legal documents that say it's not true, and belief is belief.
Yeah.
So, which does bring me around to another subject that I wanted to talk to you about, as long as you have time. You mentioned how, you know, like there could be an increase or a decrease in faith going through this. Like, are people saying there's absolutely no God who would do this, or are people saying I need something that's bigger than me in my life? Because I've gone up and down and through things, and I'm at that point again where I'm like, I just need something bigger than me, even if it's not real. Like, mm-hmm.
that makes perfect sense. I think
even the scientific brain inside me is just saying, like, it's just atoms. It's just, you know, it's whatever.
And whether it's belief in a higher power, or if it's belief in human kindness, or mm-hmm. just anything, I think people need things, not even need, but are just naturally going to gravitate toward things that are going to reinforce what they already feel. You know, if, oh, well, you know, this person is kind of lapsed Catholic and all this shit has happened, well, maybe they're going to go back to the church, go back into it and become, you know, more involved. You know, we've got a lot of just crackpot evangelical bullshit going on out there. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see more of it.
Yeah. I watched a fascinating series. It's on Hulu right now. It was made a couple years ago. Elizabeth Vargas is the main host. Obviously there's a team of people involved in its creation, but it's about cults and extreme beliefs. And I found it fascinating. I mean, like, even to the point where that, like, Warren Jeffries dude gets sent to prison. So there's still this small pocket of people in this absolutely dead town that have his portrait in every room in their house, even though he's in jail. And they, you know, and they still live in that specific way that he, as they call the prophet, defined. You know, they make, you know, they have a certain dress pattern, and that's the dresses that they make, and they have polygamy, and and so the people who have left their church or whatever you want to call it, it's a cult, but it, you know, the people who have left there have been like, look, we want to help you, you know, we did spend our lives with you, and we want to give you back something to help, so that, because this town is clearly dead. So they're trying to like invest in buying up properties and welcoming business and reopening a clinic because the clinic had to close. And these folks who are still in this brainwashed state of their prophet, they're just like, well, I won't go to that clinic. And it's like, they're trying to help you. Like, you literally have no actual medicine in your town.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that. But God will provide. Yes, yes. God has provided. He gave us penicillin.
Yes, exactly. And he's delivering you these people who are, you know.
It's, oh, there's, it's like a, there's this joke about a storm and floods are taking over this town, and there's a priest who's praying to God, you know, deliver me from this. And a car drives up and says, hey, preacher, come on in. We're picking people up. So no, there's more important people than me. And this goes on as the waters are coming up, and he's on the next floor and with the flooding, and there's a boat goes by, and he ends up, go after more deserving people. And he gets up to the roof, and a helicopter comes by and says, no, other people. And then, of course, he ends up drowning. He goes up to heaven, and he says, God, why didn't you save me? Dude, I sent you a car, a boat, and a helicopter.
Yes.
I think faith is going to, I think that kind of issue with extreme faith, I think we're going to see more of it. I have no evidence that we will, but I believe, speaking of belief, that we probably will. I hope not. And I'm not sure what the hell I could do about it anyway.
Well, it's what is so mesmerizing about it, just watching and like, if you were an alien studying our society, it's like, you know, we have this idiot like Trump who does not believe anything that his followers want. He, you know, he's on like wife number a gazillion and has children by all different women, and he cheats on everybody, and he cheats on his taxes. And, you know, he's, everything he says is a lie. He can't run a proper business without going bankrupt. I mean, and yet they're like, oh, well, here are our tenets of not stealing and not killing and being faithful and yada, yada, yada.
And they're
yada.
Forgetting their top number one, which is thou shalt be a hypocrite.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, that's why I feel like there's like a brainwashing. There's something like, but this is your creed right here, and this individual stands for none of this, and that's who you're going to allow to have power. Like, it just makes no sense. And whether that's a religious leader or a politician, I mean, it goes both ways.
Yeah, you're never gonna convince a true believer. You know, you can argue, and they're still going to come up with something because they're a true believer. You know, you can't shake up, you can't argue God out of existence because somebody is going to believe strongly enough that they'll just throw everything that you that you toss. Yeah, but what about this? Oh, it's God's will. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of thing just shuts down a conversation. I was reading an article on Waco, because I think it's like, it was a couple of days ago, it was the 20th.
Yeah, there's a new series about it as well. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was a quote from somebody who, I think he was on the team with the FBI, who said, what was it? There's no point in having a theological discussion with someone who believes he's Christ. You're not going to win. I mean, it's like, no matter what, it's a losing proposition.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things about these sort of cult mentalities is it's always about the end of the world, and they're ready for it. But then it's like, and I will say this, and I've said it publicly before, I think, I have relatives who are the preppers types. Uh-huh. They stockpile everything. They have 50 cans of coffee. They have, you know, like, I don't know, just a ridiculous amount of stuff. They built a bunker for Y2K. Like, they, you know, and then, you know, COVID-19 comes along and people are quarantined. And it's like, okay, so now this is the time for you to use that stockpile. Like, this is not the time for you to go rushing back off to Costco to say, I need more. Like, you've stockpiled for an emergency. This is your emergency.
Right.
And it just doesn't quite get through.
Well, because this isn't the emergency where they can shoot it.
Yes.
You can't shoot the virus. I mean, a lot of the, and I understand the prepper mentality. Mm-hmm. My dad was like a sort of a pseudo mini prepper, where he would, I mean, we had so many boxes of MREs.
Right. Well, we used to too, but
shit.
Yeah. But I mean, it used to be like enough to get through like a bad storm, you know?
Yeah. Or, okay, you know, you're going to have, or we're going to have nuclear winter, so you better stock up. But there's a practical aspect, and then there's the, wow, you just kind of took this, you know, a little too far. Mm-hmm. And you end up having to wonder what sort of emergency were they trying to prep for in the first place?
Right.
Like, well, I've got,
that's
15
what I don't understand.
You know, AR-7s, and okay, why?
Why? Yeah.
It's
to protect their 50 cans of coffee, apparently. I guess.
Oh God, what was it? There's a gun store here in LA that's been around forever, and the day that state government was starting to talk about, hey, yeah, we're probably going to be having to shut down non-essential businesses, the place got flooded.
Mm-hmm.
There was a line a block long outside that store of people going in, and I don't know, are they getting ammunition? Are they getting, are they trying to buy new guns? What, you know? And I wonder how many people went there saying, I got to get myself a gun. Is that great? Sign here, do that. Give me your money. We'll get it to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
not quite getting how it works. Yeah. But yeah, it's shit like this makes people go crazy.
Yeah, obviously, because we've seen them lose their minds out there. They're like the people that were, what was it? Texas and Georgia sometimes are equally crazy. I can't remember which one it was, but they were wanted their gym to reopen. So they were out there like doing push-ups and squats on the sidewalk as their form of protest.
Right. In which case, like, I wonder, why do you need the gym?
Yeah. And exactly. And it's like, okay, push-ups are not going to save you from a virus. Like, there's such a thing as a healthy body, but there's also such a thing as being a carrier while being in a healthy body and spreading shit.
Well, I look healthy.
Yes. Plenty of people look healthy. And then, you know, there are people that's, and then that's, you know, of course, with all the invisible illnesses out there, it's like, but you don't look sick.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
like,
that's,
come on now.
Yeah.
It's like, you could be crawling with all kinds of things.
Yeah. And funny, you don't look like an asshole, but.
Yeah. But you are. Yeah. So before I let you go, because we were going to talk about ghosts and
we were, and
monsters and cryptids and all this exciting stuff, and it all and I can't even remember why you had done something on Twitter that got into this big discussion about ghosts. And so as long as you're okay time wise, I want to hear about ghosts.
Okay.
Because we're living in a place where, like, you know, if 10,000 people a day are dying or whatever, like, there's probably a lot of ghosts around.
We'll probably see a few ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got bored. I think this was last week, and I just started talking about parapsychology and something I haven't really discussed in a really long time, because I used to be super into it, to the how do I get, what kind of education do I need to get in order to have this be the kind of thing I'm studying? And this was, of course, many years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember you, like, those cards where, like, you have the star, the way, uh-huh. Okay, the wavy lines and whatnot. You see it in Ghostbusters, the original, if you don't know what they are.
And yeah, so I mean, so I was just talking about, you know, people's experiences and some of the stuff that's gone into, I don't even know where the field's at this point. But things that have gone into, making parapsychology what it is. And I started talking about, the Rhein experiments at Duke University in the 30s. And that's what had the conversation about Zener cards. These experiments were pretty simple. You have someone who can't see the cards, and you've got a deck with four sets of five cards. Something like that. But there are five cards. There's circle, square, star, wavy line, and a plus. And they're called Zener cards. Z-E-N-E-R, after the guy who actually designed them. And the idea is that the person who is the experimenter is on one side of, you know, a board or something where they can't be seen. And they overturn a card. And the person on the other side, the subject, is supposed to guess what the card is. And when they first started doing these, they got, and this is one of the things that makes people start snoring when you start talking about parapsychology, because all of it is based on math. It's all statistics. They were getting. Right. They were getting hits. Somebody being able who's guessing right an unusually high number of times, and if there's nothing that, and if you've controlled for everything, then something, whatever you want to call it, whatever you think it may or may not be, something is influencing that, and. In these experiments, they were getting really statistically significant hits, and some things got pointed out, and they had some issues with them, and they redid them, and this is over decades, and these were run by Joseph Banks Rhein and Louisa Rhein, at they started they ended up going to Duke University. They started it outside, but they were botanists. So I don't know what the hell made botanists go, you know what?
Let's study mentalism.
Yeah. They wrote a lot of papers. It's good information. It's interesting. I hate math, so my eyes glaze over with some of those, but it's over the years, it's had some interesting, I think is interesting. Because like we were talking about earlier with belief, if you believe, then chances are you're going to go, oh, okay, that makes sense. And if you don't, you go, this is bullshit, you know, and a lot of that's always been the case. I mean, the Victorian era spiritualism.
Yeah, exactly. The theosophy and
it, exactly, you know, and, yeah. And
Houdini. Yeah, absolutely. You
know, and debunk those things. And I mean, there was a famous one where the Fox sisters, and these are the ones who always come right. up as sort of like these were the first really everybody knew who they were mediums. And it turned out that one of them was able to shift her knee to bump a table to make that shake, and the other one could crack her toes so loud that it sounded like somebody was knocking on the table. So you have these things of, you know, this extraordinary experience that people going, oh my God, look at this. And then somebody comes in and walks in and says, no, because this, this, and this. And that has always happened. I mean, if you talk to a stage magician about any kind of paranormal event, they'll tell you, oh, well, do this, 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 and you recreate it. And for the record, I don't necessarily think I believe in ghosts. Sometimes, you know, I know that there's weird shit out there, and that's about it. And that opinion has shifted over years. Just in fact, the more I've read, the less convinced I've gotten. And there are other things like, okay, wait a minute, yeah, that actually does make sense. But like I was saying, you talk to, you know, a stage magician, and they say, yeah, well, you can create it this way. And the person who believes, like, oh, no, it had to have been this. And I think there's a middle ground of that for people to be in the question and just note the evidence. Because, yeah, every effect can be created. The question is, was it?
Right. Well, it's, you know, people are still trying to ponder like how the pyramids were built. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of situations like that where like, oh no, like this. Oh God, I'm trying to think of one. The Black Monk of Pontefract. This was a poltergeist that has been considered one of the most violent, and I grabbed this is Pontefract, England, and the house was either on or across the street from a gallows where a monk had been hung for raping and murdering some girl in the village. And supposedly that is the spirit that's in this house. And they had, you know, the usual experiences of things being knocked over, noises happening. but then they started getting attacked. And one girl had was grabbed by the hair and dragged downstairs.
Right. So when these things happen, and even though, like, I'm sure Hollywood wise, because special effects are amazing, things can be recreated. But when something happens to somebody, how is that debunked and explained?
Well, and that's the thing, is you get, it comes down to the, could it have been faked? Yes. Was it? If you are going into the situation and saying, okay, this could not possibly be because ghosts do not exist, et cetera, et cetera. Well, then you're calling this girl a liar. You're calling her parents liars.
Mm-hmm.
You're calling other people who have experienced things in the house liars. And that's an even more cynical way of viewing the world, I think, than I do. And I'm pretty cynical. because, I mean, it's one thing of, oh, we heard a noise. Okay, yeah, you all heard the noise, but what does that mean? You know?
Yeah, I mean, noises happen.
Yeah.
Temperatures can change. I understand that.
Oh my God, there's a cold spot. Dude, you're under the air conditioner.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, certain things. But then, like, when you're sitting in bed and you actually feel where nobody is, and you actually feel the bed go down, it's like, okay, somebody's sitting on my bed. Yeah. Yeah. So over here, we just write it off as the cats, and we just enjoy our cat ghosts. Although I'm pretty sure that my grandfather's spirit did visit once. But it's, again, to me, physics is more able to explain than to not explain. Like, you know, it's energy. Like, energy gets, you know, goes other ways and goes to other places. And, you know, people probably never thought that they could record on wax cylinders. And yet, like, there's stuff in there, and it makes sound.
Yeah. I mean, there are things we simply don't know and don't understand. And one of the things that has, I hate to use the word haunted, parapsychology in general, is the fact that it's called parapsychology. It was originally, psychology is originally, you know, attached to philosophy. So it's got points against it right there. And then you have parapsychology, which is, okay, we're talking about psychology, but this isn't, I don't know if this is, so are we talking mind stuff? But now you're telling me about ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would have suffered less if it had been lumped in with physics. And just, you know, anomalous shit. Because there are things that psychology, simply, you know, looking at it from a belief perspective or perception and all that, yeah, they're all useful aspects. But if you want empirical data on some kind of, you know, paranormal event, you need to have a way to record it, and a way to analyze it, and a way to recreate it.
Yes, that's, yeah, as far as the scientific method goes, and you have to be able to have repeated the outcome.
Yeah. And one thing that I will give all of these ghost hunter TV shows is that they all, whether they're doing it correctly or whether they're actually doing anything useful with it, they're all at least trying to make an attempt at showing instrumentation. hey, mm-hmm. we've got an EM field detector. And, you know, they, you know, when you're watching these idiot dude bros in green light IR bumping through some old asylum squealing yeah. because, oh my God, I heard something. And
spider webs touch her face. And right. I mean, it's still scary. Right. You're literally yeah, putting people and in a scary predicament.
They're sensationalism. That's all they are. They're shows. They're, you
know, yeah, of course. And, they're entertainment.
Yeah. yeah. And a couple, and there are a couple that actually, like, are not nearly that bad. They actually seem to go, okay, you're actually going to look at this and take this seriously. And not just run around screaming in the dark mm-hmm. and bumping into things and, you know, but they'll show things like, yeah, we have cameras. See, we've got, you know, IR cameras and we've got EM field detectors and we've got, these thermometers that we use to check for cold spots. And yeah, it's stupid what they're doing. But they are pulling from ideas and real life equipment of people who are actually trying to do this.
Mm-hmm. And it's possible that like things like the invention of the camera and the cell phone and, you know, that maybe the technology isn't there yet to capture what would scientifically prove this to the science world. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe maybe in 1,000 years, if the planet exists, you know, yeah, there'll be
the people actually.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I hadn't realized when I saw it, and it wasn't until later when I started digging into this stuff. A lot of the stuff in Ghostbusters, Dan Aykroyd is very, very into the paranormal. He was a member of the American Society for Psychical Research. A lot of the stuff that he talks about or that they talk about in the movie, like book stacking and Tunguska and they also have a thing with Zener cards.
Right. They do. Yeah.
yeah where they shock the guy.
Yeah. Yes. Every time he gets it wrong.
But there is stuff that exists that they clearly pulled from. Like the ghost classification, there actually is, and this I think it was in the 50s. I got the book around here somewhere.
Where it was like if something's malevolent versus if it's poltergeist. Yeah,
this was it's a book called Apparitions, and I think it was written in the 50s. I think the 50s, and it started with a survey that was done in Britain by the Society for Psychical Research called the Census of Hallucinations. And they collected a bunch of stories of people who said they'd seen a ghost or something odd or, you know, but primarily, you know, just they saw a ghost of something, or, you know, I saw grandpa and then he talked to me and then I found out that he died an hour before, that kind of thing.
And yeah. Like that's weird shit. Was
collect these things. So the guy started there and took these, his name was George Tyrell. Book is Apparitions. I'm sure it's out of print, but I'm sure, you know, it can be found somewhere. Where he took these and he kind of put everything into their own little boxes, go, okay, so we've got, and he basically had four classes
There was experimental apparitions. Okay, we're gonna sit here and try to do astral projection. And Bob, do you see me down the hall? Kind of thing. Where someone saw something and found out that, yeah, he was trying to contact you, or, you know, somehow purposely attempting to do this, to create an apparition. The second is the crisis apparition, and it's the, I saw, you know, Frank, he appeared in my bedroom, and then I found out at the exact moment he was drowning in the river or was in a car crash. And I, you know, just things like the things that were based around a crisis. And then you have class three, which are the post-mortem apparitions. And, you know, those are your dead guys. But there's a cutoff on there because, okay, at what point do you call it a crisis apparition versus a post-mortem apparition? I think they kind of, he came up with, like, it's about 24 hours is what he sort of arbitrarily tossed in there. So if, you know.
So how fresh the ghost is. So
how fresh it is. Exactly. And then you have class four, which are hauntings. And these are things that, apparitions that appear on a semi-regular basis in a location. These are the ones that that there are stories about, whether it's a ghostly hitchhiker or Lloyd Ruthbottom in Ruthbottom Hall, who, you know, walks.
Well, yeah, the Amityville Horror place. Right? Wasn't that based on a real thing or something? I don't know. I've never seen it or read it or anything.
That one gives me a headache. Okay. That was
that falls into too scary for me.
Yeah, one was bullshit.
Okay.
And it's funny because that one comes up a lot, and the people who actually went and looked into it, you know, who from the people who study parapsychology and they looked into it and they walked out and went, yeah, this is bullshit.
Oh, okay.
It didn't go any further than that, because they said, "Yeah, I don't know what these people's problem is." Okay.
Like as you're saying, there are all of these other examples.
And then again, and that kind of turns into that same thing of, yeah, it can be fake, but was it? And sometimes the mm-hmm. answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these four classes. And you look at Ghostbusters and you have things like the class five free floating phantasm. Okay. Because, and I think they
and was this the librarian? Would be the librarian example. Yeah. Okay.
And they called it, you know, Tobin's spirit guide.
Yes.
George Tyrell's apparitions. They had not the villain so much as the historical, you know, the person who built the summoning circle or whatever, Ivo Sandor. Okay. Well, in the 30s, a Hungarian reporter wrote an encyclopedia called the Encyclopedia of Psychic Science. And it's great just from a perspective of, like, as a writer to look at different things. Some of it's like, okay, that's useless, but this is interesting. And his name was Nandor Fodor.
I love that name.
And
well, it's like Fodor's travel guide.
So I mean, you see the little those kinds of things. So there has been, as I think, there has been science done. I think that it conclusively proves absolutely nothing. True believers are just as bad as true skeptics, as far as I'm concerned. Because I've read into both of them, and they're just fucking insufferable. but it's got, no, wait, how can you say that this is this thing, this, it's the spirit? How, by what criteria? What are you basing this on? And the same thing of, oh, it's obviously a fake. It's like, all right, well, I could have done this, but this, it's like, yeah, but I don't see any pulleys. I don't see any, you know, how did they do this based on what you're actually seeing here? But I don't think we have, and I don't think we're ever going to get, at least, you know, like, is it maybe in 1,000 years when the technology gets to a particular point? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. I will recommend that the TV show on CBS called Evil. It did have, I mean, it has a first season so far, and it's religious based because it's a man going into the priesthood. What's his name? Coulter, the guy who was Luke Cage. And it's just interesting because this is exactly how they set up their so-called their team to determine whether something is real or not. They have a woman who's a doctor and a psychiatrist. And then they have like their nerd guy who knows all the tech stuff of how something could be faked or, you know, whatever. He's like, not just software engineering, but like actual engineering. And then you have the priest. So it's this interesting trio, you know, checking out whether people are actually possessed or not.
Okay.
So it's like, it's very well acted, and it does, you know, it gets into some of the like actual social causes, well, not causes, but issues that are going on, like the incel movement, like how this demon infiltrates like through the message boards and convinces, you know, these incels to go shoot, you know, so-and-so up and, you know, and how they're chosen to represent, you know, their population of white male jagweeds and, you know, and that sort of thing. So it is interesting and entertaining, and the actors are fantastic.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. So if you get, you know, if you have CBS, it's, I don't think it was only the all access version. I think it was regular CBS, but yeah, it's just called Evil. So it would be a fun watch. And a few years ago, there was a comic I loved. It was a mini series called Skeptics. And it was talking about the, you know, just like the stuff that we're talking about, how the U.S. was trying to beat Russia in, you know, having reading minds, mind control, astral projection, and all of this stuff. But it was a great comic. And let's say, oh, Wanderers by Chuck Wendig, if you haven't read that since we were talking about the pandemic, and how much you should trust computers or not. a belief system, although in Wanderers, the people that go around protecting this flock of people who are seemingly possessed, but it's not possession in a religious context, it's a science context. So the people that are protecting them as they walk around the country are called shepherds, because they're walking around and they're, you know, making sure that they're safe. And also just from a belief factor, you know, that there's something so special about these chosen people that that they must serve a higher power. So interesting, long read, I will say, but interesting in these times. Or maybe you want to stay away from that, but if it's too much.
I definitely recommend Wanderers. It's a great book.
Yeah. So are you doing, I've been very much enjoying that Noir at the Bar has been virtual since I've been able to to get there, so to speak. I can log in and actually hear people and reading their stories and just socializing. Uh-huh. So is your LA version of Noir at the Bar doing virtual podcast?
I actually haven't been involved with it for a couple of years now. I just wasn't able to commit as much, and Eric Beatner, and oh my god, I can't remember his last name. Eric Beatner's been, I mean, he and I got it going years ago, and he's just kept it going.
Okay, so somebody's.
Oh yeah, it's still happening. And that's the thing is, he's always been the driver for that. He's just very kind of geared into sort of just the noir mystery writers in general. So I don't know if LA is doing virtual. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's not or hasn't looked into it.
Yeah, So the New Jersey, and I believe I don't know if there's just one in New York, but the one that
I think there's two in New York.
Okay, it might be Queens.
Yeah, because Todd Robinson was doing one.
Okay,
and Alex Segura was doing another one.
Yeah, so I joined the Jersey group the other night, and it was wonderful to actually finally, because I mean, otherwise I would never make it out to any of these bars at that time of night on a weekday and still drive myself back. It would just be too late at night for somebody like me. I'm in bed by six. So, you know, I'm just I can be in bed and log in like that. I can do. So if anybody has any interest in and you like that sort of thing where authors get to read a little bit of their own work, there's an anthology coming out called Lockdown. So I got to hear people reading some of those stories or at least a chapter from those stories about this particular time. So that's interesting. But otherwise, there's no point in asking you if you're going to be touring anywhere.
Yeah.
What any announcements? You got the Patreon. Anything else you want to go over before I let you go?
Buy my books. Ghost Bunny just came out. I like it. Other people seem to like it. Buy all the rest of them so you know what's going on, because that's book number 5. And I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm boring.
You're not boring. That's why I love talking to you.
I don't have anything going on. So yeah, okay. Yeah, I've got the Eric Carter books. Buy my books, please. Yes,
it's wonderful. And follow him on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter, definitely. And join his Patreon if you can, or at least retweet and share. If you're like me, you will just kind of gloss over some of the, Nahuatl words. Did I say that or even close?
Oh, Nahuatl.
Words.
The L is
not there.
Silent.
Okay. So, so we're talking Nahuatl. About pre-Aztec, or is it?
Aztec mythology figures heavily in the Eric Carter series.
Yeah.
And so there's the gods that are talked about. They can be a little confusing, and I apologize. And I sometimes look back and go, why did I go for Aztec again? Because,
Well,
I mean, I've had to train everything I have from Gmail to, Word or whatever.
A lot of add to dictionary.
Exactly. McDonald Quigley, McTech Swat, all that. It just, Yeah.
I was using like, I was using like Tua Danann, like, you know, Celtic words in my manuscript, and it kept coming up. And I was just like, seriously? Like, I mean, I get some of them, but it's hard when it's something that's more than one word. So it's like this, these three words together are one thing, or they're a name, you know? Uh-huh. And I don't know how to like, just say, okay, if it was spelled wrong, then I want to know, but I need like these three words to be the same when they appear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a challenge.
And I've run into that too.
My typing sucks. So it was, you know, I did a lot of copy paste, especially because of accents. I'm like, damn, like, you know, I didn't have any kind of keyboarding that involved learning how to type letters with accents. So it slows things down. But so that's where we are. So Ghost Money is out. Eric Carter, number 5. You can follow Stephen Blackmore on Twitter and his Patreon. Does your dog have an Instagram or no?
She does not. She probably should. If okay. I could ever actually get a picture of her. Because she's she's either sleeping or vibrating.
So it's just a blur.
Just a blur. This yeah. black streak.
Yeah. Those can be fun too. I do that. A lot of my chipmunk pictures are like that. It's like that blur right there is a chipmunk. All right. So you guys can follow me on Twitter at Elizabeth Amber. My Patreon is Amber Unmasked, and my website is Amber Unmasked, and my Instagram is Amber Unmasked. Usually I don't get the same name from platform to platform, so it's a little bit harder, but that's why Twitter is different, Elizabeth Amber. But thank you, Stephen, so much, because I could pick your brain and talk about writing and publishing and viruses and religion and a lot of stuff for a long, long time. So I appreciate that you spent some extra time here.
Well, thank you. It was fun.
All right. So take care, everybody, and stay safe and wear your mask.